today's newspapers carry pictures of bodies wrapped in white shrouds lying in makeshift morgues in the Syrian capital Damascus. As many as 1,400 people may have died in a poison gas attack on rebel-held areas of the city. According to opposition sources, the Syrian government has dismissed reports of a gas attack by its forces as terrorist propaganda. Residents of three suburbs were asleep when the alleged attack took place early on Wednesday morning. If independently verified, this would constitute the most serious use of poison gas since 1988, when 3,000 to 5,000 Iraqi Kurds were gassed by Saddam Hussein's forces at Halabja. The Guardian's Middle East correspondent, Martin Chuloff, is on the line. Martin, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
What do we know about the attack appears to have unfolded?
Well, it appears that at around 2 a.m. on Wednesday morning in Damascus, a very large military offensive was launched into the eastern suburbs by the Syrian military. The east of the capital had been rebel-held for most of the past year. There had been scenes of fierce fighting in these areas. The rebel groups had not been dislodged. They'd been shifted back ever so slightly, but they remained a potential threat to the power base of the capital. They were only 7 miles away from the presidential palace for most of this time. During this offensive, it is alleged that chemical weapons were deployed, and large numbers, many hundreds, we are told, and certainly eyewitness testimonies do support a large-scale killing took place, were caused on the ground in truly distressing scenes. Men, women and children, as have been depicted around the world in the last 24 hours.
Is any independent verification likely to be possible?
Well, it is going to be difficult for the UN team that is in Damascus at the moment to get access to this. As I said, it is only 7 miles away from where they are staying. But in order to get there, they do need permission from the Syrian government. And that permission would only be forthcoming if the Syrian government decided to allow them in. And that would be predicated on whether the UN Security Council or all of the General Assembly made a formal request for that to happen. So any form of independent verification in the short term is going to be unlikely, sadly, and that is going to be something which will forever muddy the waters here, because it is important to get there from a scientific perspective within the next 48 hours and take samples from victims and also from the soil and also from areas where these shells did in fact land.
How compelling is the evidence that is currently available? I mean, essentially it's videos on YouTube.
It's videos on YouTube. These scenes aren't theatre. It's very clear that something truly distressing and truly large-scale has taken place. There's no doubt about that. And I would invite your listeners to draw their own conclusions by looking at some of the 120 videos that are available. Many more are being posted throughout the day. But it is clear to anybody who has watched them that what is taking place are scenes of genuine distress and people showing signs, very clear signs of respiratory distress. We've consulted a number of scientists over the last 24 hours and also chemical and biological weapons experts, and all of those that we've spoken to have said that these scenes present the most compelling evidence so far of some form of gassing having taken place during the Syrian civil war.
If you're a skeptic, the notion of cui bono applies. Who benefits? And it's been suggested that Assad would not have launched an attack like this when he was aware of the fact that UN inspectors were actually in Damascus.
And that's a reasonable question to pose. Does this play in his favour with UN inspectors only a short distance away? I would mount the counter argument that if he had nothing to hide, then open the east of the capital to these inspectors and let them get out there and establish what has taken place, what agent was in fact used. So today will be reasonably instructive in terms of the Syrian regime's response. Are they going to allow unfettered access, or are they going to stall and say that this site is off limits and the only sites that can be inspected by the UN team currently in place are those three that have been previously agreed on?
And what might have been the purpose of this attack, as opposed to simply shelling the area with normal artillery ordnance, which would be the norm for the Assad regime?
Well, over the last year, the east of the capital has been a continual hotspot for rebel groups, among them the more mainstream Free Syria Army and also jihadist groups, Al-Qaeda-backed groups who have increasingly taken prominence there. They continue to pose an existential threat to the regime's power base, that is the security institutions, the presidential palace, all institutions of government, which are only a short distance away. They have been bombed repeatedly through aircraft, through surface-to-surface missiles, through tanks, through artillery, for most days in the past year, and they haven't been dislodged. Why change things now? I mean, if we assume that there may be some credence to the regime having used chemical weapons, it could be because it is now time to mount a decisive push to clear these areas for once and for all. There has been a relentless pressure from the Syrian military establishment to get rid of the opposition groups from so close to the power base of the capital.
In descriptions, in anecdotal evidence, witness reports, there are reports of people being found in their homes looking as if they were asleep, even though they were obviously dead. But in other instances, there were reports of people foaming at the mouth. Are these consistent? I mean, is there any type of gas that could produce either or both of those effects, do we know?
Well, I defer to the scientific experts on that, all of whom are hedging their bets at this point, perhaps wisely, as to what agent, if any, was in fact used. What they do say conclusively is that something has taken place. There has been something deployed which has affected the respiratory systems of these people. Now, I guess various individuals could show different symptoms. That's not uncommon in terms of mass poisonings or mass illnesses. So I guess the straight-up medical science, we'll continue to defer for now. And those questions do need to be answered in the short term.
Two theories that have been advanced. One is that this was an attack. It was a chemical attack, but it was a chemical attack which was not approved by higher authority. Is that credible?
It's difficult to believe that something such as this, a strategic decision to employ non-conventional weapons such as this, wouldn't have been improved by a central command of the Syrian military. That's if you assume that the Syrian military was responsible for what had taken place. Knowing full well how the state of Syria does operate, it would be almost impossible to imagine that a renegade commander would just deploy chemical weapons en masse into the field without the approval of right up the chain.
The other theory is that this was an attack perpetrated by the rebels themselves on their own supporters, knowing that UN inspectors were in the region.
Yeah, and that certainly is the counter-argument being put by people who would say that the regime would not do this, it would not gas its own capital. I would say to that what has taken place is clearly large-scale. It would appear to support the view that a coordinated military assault has been responsible for the carnage that we have seen in these videos. This is not a simple matter of just opening a canister of some poison gas at town square and letting it drift around in the pre-dawn mist. This is something which really does take a high degree of coordination. It's not an easy thing to do, to weaponize any sort of poison gas at all, let alone sarin. So it does appear that a coordinated and capable body has been responsible for this. It certainly isn't a haphazard act.
Let's talk a little bit about the international reaction, because Barack Obama is already on the record as saying that any sort of chemical attack by Assad would be crossing a red line. The French government has said that if this is proven to have been a chemical attack, that the rest of the world must respond with force. So where will this go, or where could this go internationally?
It is difficult to read. There is no doubt that the Americans have had no appetite for this ever since the Civil War broke out, and potentially with good reason. They look to Iraq, and they do say that, 10 years after an invasion of a sovereign state, a sectarian sovereign state, what has been achieved there? The answer is very, very little. It would appear, by any reasonable objective test, that the Americans don't have the influence in the heartland of Arabia that the war planners may have intended them to have. In fact, to the contrary, Arch for Iran is doing very well there at their expense. So they're not in any real hurry to rush back into another misadventure in yet another sectarian state in the Middle East. The Europeans and the Brits, they're not too terribly keen to do so either. None of them want to act with without the Americans taking the lead. The same could be said for Saudi Arabia and for Turkey. Is this going to change things? Well, that's very much up to Obama. And, you know, he, despite the fact that he's mentioned these red lines several times now, there hasn't been any sign that he's prepared to follow through with any implicit threats that he's made. So I think the coming days are going to be very, very instructive in terms of where this takes us. Is this is this a critical moment in the Syrian civil war? I would argue that it is, but it's not yet clear that it's going to lead to any direct military intervention.
And at UN Security Council level, is Assad safe? Will he be protected and shielded by Russia and possibly China?
Well, he certainly was last night when the UN Security Council held an emergency session to discuss what had taken place and how to react to it. And I'd make the point that over the last 2 years, there hasn't been any sign at all that the Russians have wavered in their implacable support for Assad. Their senior officials are saying that if indeed what has taken place is a chemical attack, then it wasn't the regime that was responsible for it. So far, no change on that. Again, that's going to be very interesting to watch. Very instructive as part of the overall international response to what has taken place.
This is obviously a civil war. It's also a proxy war. Will this act, if it's proven to have been a chemical gas attack on the citizens of Damascus by the regime, will that give pause to Assad's proxies, Iran and Russia?
There would need to be a very compelling, very convincing case made that the regime was indeed responsible if Russia and China were likely to withdraw any support. As you've rightly identified, this is a proxy war. The issues are much bigger here than, you know, who controls Syria going forward. These are regional issues. These are global issues in many ways. There's a Shia-Sunni fault line that's being played out here. There's an American-Russian fault line. I mean, the strategic alliances that run straight through Damascus are enormous, and they do pose a significant problem in terms of how to solve this, how to get these two sides back from the point of mutual destruction to any sort of meaningful dialogue. And we're still a long, long way away from that. And I do think that even when this is eventually solved, it will need to be an international solution involving Russia, China, the US, Iran, and the rest of the Sunni world. But, you know, we're nowhere near that at this point.
Martin Chulov, thank you very much indeed for that analysis. That's the Guardian's Middle East correspondent, Martin Chulov, on the line there.